Hey everybody, it's me, Cameron, and welcome to the first episode of Cameron Knows Nothing. Today we are going to talk about Tuesday's midterm elections with Jon Favreau from Pod Save America. And considering the fact that I don't know when this is actually going to get released, I mean Tuesday, November 6th. And in case you haven't tuned out yet, let me tell you a little bit about why this podcast actually exists. So, in case you're lucky enough to not know who I am, my name is Cameron Caskey and I'm a high school senior, kind of. After the tragic shooting at my school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, I got my friends together and we organized the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. and a city near you. Now, when you're 17 years old and you suddenly have 400,000 people following you on Twitter, chances are you are going to think you're hot shit. I certainly did. I thought I was a genius and every single thing I said was gospel, not unlike many other 17-year-old boys. But about halfway through the summer, I had this crazy, rude awakening. I do not know everything. Turns out, I have an awful lot to learn. And here's what I started thinking. Maybe people who disagree with me, maybe, they could have a point. Maybe. Maybe folks who disagree with me could be good people. And this all seems like pretty rudimentary knowledge, but it completely threw me for a loop. My intellectual opponent might not inherently be a bad person. And that inspired me to start my very own intellectual journey, for lack of a better word, which I've aptly titled, Cameron Knows Nothing. And the point of this show is to explore all sorts of perspectives from many different sides of the ideological spectrum. You might disagree with some of my guests, you might completely despise them, and I might have some pretty harsh things to say to them too, but the point is, we have to listen to each other. Staying in an echo chamber is going to do absolutely nothing for you as a human being, I promise. I'm not asking you to agree with my guests or to like my guests. Hell, I'm not asking you to like me. You certainly won't. I'm asking you to listen, and I'm daring you to try to understand. My God, I'm so dramatic. This is what an entire life in theater classes will do to you. Anyway, let's get to the Favreau interview. Now, in case any of you are not aware who Jon Favreau is, he is a former Obama speechwriter and host of the Obama Bros podcast, Pod Save America, with Tommy Veter, John Lovett, and a great staff. All the people over at Crooked Media are fantastic, and they represent the left side of the ideological spectrum in what I consider to be a very solid way. And we're going to talk about that now. Here we go.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, a lot of my audience with this show is younger. A lot of people are probably going to be on the more Democratic side. And a lot of young Democrats I know were super disappointed about Tuesday. And, you know, there were some I was emotionally invested in some seats that, you know, did not go the way I wanted them to, what with Gillum and O'Rourke and Abrams. But there's a lot to be excited about. And I thought, who better than the big mamma jamma, Favreau himself, to come and tell everyone there were plenty of victories, particularly in states that Trump did win and states that if Trump doesn't win in 2020, that might spell some big issues for him.
Yeah, no, of course. Look, I'm not going to spin anyone here. Like, I was very emotionally invested in Andrew Gillum's race, Stacey Abrams' race, and especially Beto O'Rourke's race. But just for some historical perspective about the House. So because I'm old as fuck now, I was around in 2006, the last midterm. I know. Can you believe it? The last midterm election when Democrats had a wave election. And here's what was going on in 2006. George Bush, heading into that election, had a 37% approval rating after the Iraq War had been raging on for years. Hurricane Katrina had just happened, and he had fucked that up badly. And there was like stories about Republican corruption almost every single day in the media leading up to the midterms. You could not have had a better environment for Democrats to run in, okay? In that election, Democrats won 31 House seats, and everyone in America called it the biggest wave ever. You know, Rahm Emanuel was the head of the DCCC at the time, and everyone hailed Rahm as a genius, and they thought, oh, Democrats just did better than anyone had ever expected. 31 seats, isn't that amazing? Well, Tuesday night, we won. And we still have votes to be counted out here in California, but we're probably looking at 36 to 38 seats. And this is a president who has a 45% approval rating, Donald Trump. And also the other important thing to realize is in 2006, this was pre-gerrymandering, right? So these were competitive House races. Democrats in 2018 faced an extremely gerrymandered map and still won 36 to 38 seats. So enormous progress in the House. Everyone should. And by the way, if all of your friends and you said, you know, a lot of young people, young people turned out in this election. It's looking to be the highest youth turnout between 18 and 29 year olds since Watergate, since 1971. If that hadn't happened, you and I would be sitting here today talking about why Democrats lost the House. So the turnout was extraordinary. Because young people turned out, this is why Democrats are in power in the House. And when you look beyond the House, Democrats contested 7 governorships where Democrats were incumbent governors. We won every single one of those. So every single Democratic governor was reelected. And then we flipped 7 Republican governorships to Democrats. So now Democrats have 7 more governorships that they didn't have before. We also
Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, baby. And what was the other one? Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and
Michigan. Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan crushed it. We also have a new Democratic governor in Maine. We have a new Democratic governor in Kansas. We have a new Democratic governor. I'm trying to think of what other states we flipped. I can't think right now. New Mexico. Oh, Nevada. Nevada. Steve Sisolak in Nevada. So anyway, we have 7 new Democratic governors that we didn't have, where there were Republicans before. Democrats also flipped 333 state legislative seats. That is, everyone talks about how during the Obama presidency, we lost 900 seats down ballot in state legislatures. That was over 8 years we lost those seats. We gained a third of those seats back on Tuesday night in one night. And that's an incredible achievement. And, you know, as you know, there were a lot of ballot measures where we succeeded too, including in Florida, where now, you know, 1.5 million people will have the right to vote who didn't have the right to vote before because they were being incarcerated.
That we need to register in 2 years, man. Like, that's exciting and all, but people got to get moving. I mean, that is great, though. That was a big victory in Florida. It was also a big victory that we got the first worst possible senator, I think, in the country. I mean, you know, I really was not a fan of Ted Cruz. I hated his bipartisan voting record or the lack thereof. I was never a fan of Ted Cruz at all. But I think Rick Scott might take the cake. And that sucks because I really generally like bald politicians. I don't know what it is.
Here's the thing about Rick Scott, though. They're in recount territory now. They're not just in machine recount territory. They're in hand counting recount territory in Florida because that's how close it is between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson. Mark Elias, who's a Democratic lawyer who I've worked with before, he's done a lot of recounts before. He is, as lawyers tend to be, incredibly cautious about pronouncements he makes. He doesn't like pop off like he's some partisan. He believes that when the votes are counted, that Senator Nelson will be going back to the Senate.
Isn't that the lawyer that filed your restraining order against me?
That is true. That is true. Yeah.
Oh, then he's good.
So he's very good.
But, I mean, Gillum, and you know, one of the things that I noticed was a lot of these big, like, disappointing Democratic losses, save Abrams and a couple others, were by such a thin margin. I mean, what was it, 0.47%?
The tiniest of margins. The tiniest of margins.
I mean, and I said this to you on the phone when we were waiting through technical difficulties. Beto lost by less than 10 trillion votes. And in Texas, that's pretty cool.
Well, look, Beto O'Rourke got 4,015,000 votes in Texas. Okay. John Cornyn, when he won in 2014, in the last midterm, when he became senator, he won 2 million something votes. Hillary Clinton, during a presidential election, when she only lost by 9 points in Texas, which, by the way, Hillary did better than Obama in Texas in both 08 and 12. And Hillary Clinton got less votes in Texas than Beto O'Rourke got in 2018. So what Beto did, and look at Donald Trump won Texas by 9 points in 2016. Beto O'Rourke lost by 2.6 percentage points. Donald Trump won Georgia by 5 points in 2016. Stacey Abrams is down by a percentage point. So even in these races where Democrats lost, they improved upon what we did in 2016, and they came so, so close. And what I would say to a lot of the young people who, you know, have gotten involved for the first time in politics is it is incredibly hard to change everything we want to change in one election. And I learned that. I got involved in politics. I started in 2004 when John Kerry lost. And then we saw good news in the midterms in 2006. And then we saw the best news when Barack Obama won in 2008. And even 8 years at Obama, we didn't fix everything. So everyone needs to keep their eyes on the prize in 2020. Like, this will be over. At least this chapter of American history will be over when we get Donald Trump out of the White House, and that's what we should be focused on in 2020.
And that's scary because, you know, what was it? In a positive economy, a sitting president hasn't been unseated since, like, the late 1800s. I'm not entirely sure what the number is. But I am willing to donate my blood in a Peter Thiel way to Joe Biden to keep him younger. Are you familiar with the whole Peter Thiel like injecting blood thing rumor? Have you read about that?
I have heard about that, unfortunately. But look, here's the thing. And I, you know how much I love Joe Biden, too. We have a number of candidates that, that you know, are young. I mean, I want Beto to run in 2020.
Everybody wants Beto. I have a distinct theory that Beto only lost in Texas because of that goddamn BETO video. I'll play it on the podcast so everybody can hear it. There was this YMCA-style thing where everybody was singing BETO, and that lost him votes.
It was a false flag operation. It was a bunch of paid cruise volunteers.
That was ridiculous. But yeah, everybody wants Beto to run. I personally think Stacey is just, I want her to, I'm willing to have a monarchy if she becomes the queen.
Look, we were here at Cricket Media at, you know, 11 o'clock when she gave her speech, and people were tired. They've been here all night. She gave that speech. People were jumping out of their chairs, clapping, crying. I mean, she is, there's few more inspiring people than Stacey Abrams.
I screamed yes, bitch, at the TV like a RuPaul's Drag Race judge. I was so happy.
Let me tell you about 2020, just to look ahead there, because it is going to be tough. But, and you know, and one thing we should all have taken from Tuesday night is, you know, we shouldn't fuck around here. Like, Donald Trump could easily win re-election in 2020. But if you look at the states that we lost in 2016, if you look at and where the infamous fucking blue wall, right? So look at Wisconsin, look at Michigan, look at Pennsylvania. The popular vote for statewide Democratic House and Senate candidates and gubernatorial candidates in those three states is enough for a Democratic candidate to win those states again in 2020. Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, who should get a lot of credit for the race that she ran, she did two things to win by 10 points in Michigan when Hillary Clinton lost Michigan. She cut the Republicans' margins among white working class voters by about half, and she did better in Detroit in the suburbs in turning people out than Hillary did. And that is the recipe in 2020. We don't need to win over every white working class voter who voted for Trump. We need to cut his margin from 2016, and we need to improve turnout in the suburbs and in the cities. And Gretchen Whitmer did that in Michigan on Tuesday night. And if we can replicate that with a candidate in Michigan in 2020, and we can do it in Pennsylvania, and we can do it in Wisconsin, then we have the map and we win. And we just need to nominate the right person.
But the Democrats did not win one important part of this nice little trinity, and we all know what that is. So we'll be right back with John to talk about the Senate.
I am the Senate.
Not yet.
But first, let's do the ad. Now, I know you've all been excited to hear me do an ad. I've been excited to do an ad, actually. It's been somewhat of a dream of mine, and we're finally getting started here. And it's actually an ad that I'm excited to share with you because it is a product that has helped me tremendously. Anchor is a company that is actually the reason this podcast is kind of existing. They have been so great, and if you've ever thought about starting your own podcast, you should go to anchor.fm/start right away. Now, when I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had so many questions. How do I record an episode? Where do I find background music? Where do I post the audio? How do I get my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all that other crap? The answer to every single one of these questions is really simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your own podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and 100% ridiculously easy to use. They have been so convenient that I have only had to talk to them like twice. So as you guys know, I've been talking about starting this podcast for a long time. I've hinted to it, I've alluded, and I've been recording plenty of episodes. There are several episodes with guests like Sean Spicer and Jon Favreau and Ben Shapiro that you won't be able to hear. I know this is a Favreau episode, but there was another one we did, and that was because I was not able to work with a company that was as efficient, quick, and really just, you know, brass tacks as Anchor. But Anchor has been hooking me up, and we are able to get this out very soon. Super excited about it. So if you are like me and you are one of the idiots who thinks that anything they have to say means anything, you can go start a podcast. Go to anchor.fm/start today. Join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. I cannot wait to hear what you all have to say. Wait, so John, so if we did so well with the House, what happened with the Senate? I know that you're inclined to say that Chancellor Palpatine is the Senate. But alas, I need you to tell me what went down.
I'll tell you, the thing that worries me the most long term about what happened Tuesday night is the Senate. I don't worry about it in the short term because Republicans had the Senate before Tuesday night. They're going to have the Senate again. And so, you know, Mitch McConnell, you know, the one of the biggest villains in Washington will continue his reign. But what happened is, like, I went into this election feeling like it's going to be really hard for Claire McCaskill, Joe Donnelly, and Heidi Heitkamp to keep those seats. And the reason is because Trump won those states by double digits, some of them in the 20s. I mean, he crushed those states. And the way demographics are working and the way that, you know, the just population changes are working, like, it's going to be really hard for Democrats to win statewide in those seats. Now, in those states. Now, I don't say that about all of the states Trump won, because Trump also won Pennsylvania, where Democrat Bob Casey cruised to victory by a lot. Trump won Ohio, where Sherrod Brown won by 6 points. Trump won Michigan, where Debbie Stabenow won. Trump won Wisconsin, where Tammy Baldwin held on. So, like, it's not that Democrats can't win statewide in places that Trump won, but in those states, Missouri, Indiana, North Dakota, like, the hard reality is those are not Democratic states. So what do Democrats do in the Senate? Well, the same demographics that are making the states that I just talked about harder for Democrats are making states like Arizona, Texas, Georgia, eventually North Carolina, easier for Democrats, or at least more competitive for Democrats, which is why you saw Beto get so close, which is why Kyrsten Sinema could still win and is hanging on Arizona, which is why in 2020, North Carolina is going to be a target for us. Tom Tillis is up there. So it's just the way that the demographics change in the country, what's making different seats competitive. But yeah, those three seats were really hard. I'm just glad Tester hung on. I'm glad Jackie Rosen is going to be the new senator from Nevada and took out Dean Heller. And then hopefully our friend Bill Nelson hangs on in Florida.
As Martin Van Buren once said, shit's fitting to be lit.
It is.
I'm telling you. Don't quote me on that. Anyway, so I know that you are pressed for time. You need to go get some goddamn sleep because you just spent how long campaigning? So I've got one more question for you. Who do you find to be the most objectively attractive president? And you can't say Obama or Kennedy.
Taft.
I was going to say Taft. He has the teddy bear thing going for him.
Love me some William Taft.
John, what do I tell everybody to listen to now that the wilderness is over? Besides Pod Save America, but everybody knows about that. You got anything new coming?
Nothing yet that I can announce or anything that's been titled. But tell them just go listen to the wilderness because it's still pretty relevant, especially now if they want to go back and
it's
take a listen to the wilderness, and hopefully we'll get some new stuff next year.
All right, great. Everybody, this is Jon Favreau. He is the person who is only weeks away from dropping John Lovett and Tommy Veter and letting them do their own thing. I hear that they're about to join conservative media. We'll see how that goes. John, thanks for talking to me again. Our last interview, my producer wouldn't let me put it out. And I was going to put it out as an evergreen one, but it starts with Obama came back today. So I can't really swing that.
Well, this one will be great.
Everybody, this is Iron Man director and star of Chef, Jon Favreau. Thanks so much, man.
Take care.
Okay, so next episode is coming right up if you're subscribing in the first one, which I encourage you not to, and it features none other than Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch himself, who's actually a really interesting guy that I think you guys might like a little bit more than you think you will. I mean, a lot of people, because of his 10.5-day tenure as White House Communications Director, think this guy is a complete buffoon, and they're not really willing to hear him out. I mean, the Mooch has the stigma behind it, but if you actually bother to listen to what he has to say, this is a pretty smart guy who's got some pretty valuable perspective. I'm also going to be speaking to Teddy Goff, who ran digital for Obama 1, Obama 2, Hillary 1, probably not Hillary 2, we'll see how that goes. And Teddy's such a great guy. I think you guys are really going to like what he has to say. So thank you for listening. Please keep listening. I need this, please. New episodes are going to be coming out every week now, so subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. If it's negative, I'm going to come find you. I will. Cameron Knows Nothing is a production of Western Sound. This episode was produced by Stephen Hoffman, and my executive producer is Ben Adair. We are distributed by Anchor. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, and episode 2 is coming right up. Remember, any asshole now thinks that they can run their own podcast, and I am one of them, so please subscribe.